The tribal tradition is that at one time the Iowa Oto Missouris were one with the Winnebago. And somewhere up towards the northeast, they separated. And the Winnebago stayed because there was a lot of good fishing areas up there. The story is saying that then the people came down this way, and at some point, the Iowas separated. They named the state of Iowa after the Iowas. And yet, Iowa is not their name that they use. The name they use in the language is Bachoje. And some people said that it meant gray nose. One Oto elder said that when they came back upon them, that it was winter time, and that the smoke holes, you know, through the lodges, there was snow over the lodges, and that smoke and soot came down and discolored the snow on top, you know, looking and making it look like gray. So when they first came back and reunited with them, they referred to them as the gray snow. And that's literally, that's what it means. Ba, snow, and Khoji is gray. Ba Khoji. The Missourias became known as Missourias because the early day Anglo explorers already named the river Missouri. And since they were living by the river, they were called Missouria. The Missourias by the late 1700s were pretty much decimated by smallpox. I believe it was the Osage or Second Fox attacked the remaining diminished village and pretty much annihilated them. There was about 100 survivors. They just scattered, and the majority of them swam across the Missouri River and joined the Otos because that was their closest relations. But it was said that some of the survivors also joined the Osages, the cause, and whoever would give them refuge. And so this occurred in the year of 1798. And from that time on, the people were always known as the Oto Missouria. And they had at least three main clan leaders. There was the Bear Clan, the Buffalo Clan, and the Eagle Clan. My mom's father and mother were both from Oto, but for whatever reason, they were living in Pawnee. So their mother stayed in Pawnee and married a Pawnee man. His name was Harry Madbear. He was a very old traditional Skeedy Pawnee, and I knew him up until times of his passing. You know, he lived quite old. He was a blind man, and he would be a great-great-grandpa to these, to my grandsons here. And then, these grandsons, I've had ceremony for them, and they got Bear Clan name, but there's nobody left. Nobody has the authority to give them names. But as the elders have died off, different ones have kind of stepped up and gone forth and do these things. In your initial prayers, you know, you just say, well, tell that you're going to go on forth and do this for your relative the best way you know how. You know, if there's any mistakes in there, why, take these mistakes, you know, and put blessings and knowledge in place of those mistakes. And they had in all their prayers, the most folks would always say, you know, they would say along the same line, Waduthangahin unwushke wawaki bewire. In other words, if I make a mistake, throw it away for us. That's what they would say. And then put knowledge and blessings in place of that. And that's the only way you can do. There was a family 20 years ago, they were Beaver Clan, and they wanted to have some Beaver Clan names given to their younger members. So during the powwow, they put out invitations, different ones come. They just kind of reestablished the old Iowa culture as best they could, you know. Yeah. And they reinstituted, you know, like the Eroshka Okigo, Eroshka Society, and a lot of the former ceremonies that they used to have in up here in Kansas. But up here, the thrust up here was acculturation and amalgamation up here. So they wanted to stay Iowa's, and they did pretty much. They pretty much did stay Nahojichi, you know, true Iowa. The Bear Clan was the leading clan, and that Bear Clan and their affiliates took the lead in the autumn and in the winter. And then in the spring, when they heard a certain frog called Peshke, it's a little green frog, tree frog, when they heard that, you know, voice, why then they knew it was time for the Buffalo Clan and their affiliates to take over. So they were the two leading clans. Once I went to a workshop, and there was a native fellow who spoke, and he made this quote that somebody said. He said, like, in every generation, there's certain individuals who have a certain innate kind of compelling interest to pursue those kind of traditional things. I not only researched as much as I could on language and things that had been done in the past, but went to the elders and got other, you know, recordings. I simply went about because it was interesting to me. And later on, as I got married and had family, I wanted these things for my family. I started to have a further understanding and deeper appreciation for them, that these were things that help bless the children to go on. This one grandson, he's 21. When he was very young, he was abandoned by his mother. For, you know, that's the way it was. So she had left him with the Ponca grandfather. And the Ponca grandfather, one day, I had an inspiration. I said, to go down to Oklahoma and see how they're doing, because I knew they had been left with him. That the word was she left him for the Christmas 2-week vacation. But when Easter rolled around and she hadn't returned, why? So, a couple years ago, he went back to Oklahoma and had been reunited with his mother down there, and he took to the streets, got to partying, you know, and all the kinds of temptations out there. Anyway, it came to pass, you know, about a year and a half ago, he was driving with his buddies, and they were all drinking and partying, and then he had a one-car accident, and he went through the windshield. And when they got him on the operation table, he died. And they put those electric clamps on him, and they brought him back to life. And ironically, he told me later on, he said, Grandpa, 3 days later, I was in a sweat lodge. And he said, it was just ironic. And then he said, the way those people run sweat lodges down there in Cheyenne area, said they have four doors. And he said, each time they open, everybody was looking with great shock and at me. He said, because apparently I was covered, my head was, having gone through the windshield, I was covered with a lot of scabs and stuff, but that sweat lodge was causing that to start peeling off, and it was as if I was being healed at that very moment. Everybody knows a sweat lodge is a healing, but we don't expect it to occur immediately. And that seemed to be occurring immediately, and everybody was just shocked and in awe that this was happening. They were witnessing this. So anyway, finally he made his way back up here, and I said, now, perhaps you understand why I had old people pray over you when you were a little guy, why I had you naming, that they would be spiritual guardians in your path. I said, you didn't come back to life just for nothing. I said, it's for you now to discover what your mission is. What it is, because you're not here just to have a second chance. There's a reason. And as it is, as that he explained further, that through that summer, three of his best buddies were killed in a car wreck. And he thought, why them and not me? And I said, yes, exactly. Why them and not you? So you returned, and I said, now, you understand why we've done these things, you know. You always said these things we did, these native ways, prayer ways, and that were something that your generation have no interest. I said, we didn't do them for nothing. We're not trying to keep culture going. We're doing it because to help us in this everyday life. it has a purpose. It's not just a cute little custom. We're doing it because there's some deep spiritual meaning behind this. And truth, yeah, and there's truth. So it all took on a new, a very new perspective, you know, and he immediately quit drinking and quit smoking and all like that. So also we, about 4 or 5 years ago, one of the old ceremonies that our folks had was what the Lakota people call a hunka ceremony, the making of relatives, which is probably the most formal way of making relatives. Well, I did this once when my son was growing up. He's now in his mid-30s, you know, and I did this for him down in Oklahoma with a Sac and Fox boy. And then I had an inspiration to do this for this grandson I'm telling you about. So there was an Arikara boy he went to school with here. And so I took this inspiration and I talked to his parents about it. I said, this is a thought that came to me. I'm going to share it with you. And if you're willing to accept it, I'm going to go ahead with it. I'm not asking you to you know, assist with cost or anything. I'm just saying if you're willing to do with it, that's what I'm going to do. And my plan is to go back up to South Dakota and get this old elder who did it the first time and bring him back down here. And so they said, yes, they would not only go with it, but they'd try to help out the best they could. And so we brought this old elder down from Little Eagle. His name was John. Flying By. Let's see. Joe Flying By. That was his name. And I had to go and get him because the Lakota still have maintained the essence of that ceremony. It used to take 4 days, but they still maintain the essence of it and a few vital songs. So this old elder came down and performed this ceremony for this grandson I'm speaking of and this son of this boy who was a Rikara Hiratsa. And so we did that, and I explained to him, you know, I said, we did all these things. And as it was, they become extended family. And when he first came back, that's who he stayed with until up to the time that they had to sell a house. And so you know, where these here old sacred bundles have become passed to disuse and artifacts because, like the hunting bundle, we don't go out and hunt buffaloes, so we don't have a use, and so there was no need to continue to learn that. And that's the way a lot of these different things have fallen to disuse. And where is Native culture to go from here is you have to make it a value, make it have some meaning and essence, some usefulness. And it's only through trying to keep those ceremonies and things such as I'm trying to explain to him that I said getting an Indian name wasn't just getting an Indian name. It was asking those attributes of them ancestors who had that name before you to bring all those good attributes to you. And at the same time to form a connection with them, that they would watch over you and protect you. And what can I say? All I know is you survived that wreck.